A year ago, after nearly 20 years as a professional singer in Chicago and Los Angeles, specializing in vocal jazz, Greg Jaspers returned to Kalamazoo to become the vocal jazz professor at his alma mater, Western Michigan University. Tonight on WMUK's Let's Hear It, WMUK host Keith Hall talks to Greg about his experiences as a vocalist, composer, and arranger. They're in the Takeda studio at WMUK with Greg Jaspers at the piano, ready to sing It Could Happen to You.
Hide your heart from sight, lock your dreams at night. It could happen to you. Don't count stars or you might stumble. Someone drops a sigh and down you tumble. Keep an eye on spring, run when church bells ring. It could happen to you. All I did was wonder how your arms would be, and it happened to me. Hide your heart from sight, lock your dreams at night. It could happen to you. Don't count stars or you might stumble. Someone drops a sigh and down, 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 down you tumble. Keep an eye on spring, run when church bells ring. It could happen to you. All I did was wonder how your arms would be, and it happened, and it happened, and it happened to me.
Greg, we're so glad you're here today with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's really great to hear you accompany yourself on the piano as you sing. And I'm amazed when I hear great vocalists accompany themselves. I mean, one of my favorite artists is Shirley Horn.
Oh, God.
Who is
yeah.
such a great example of that.
Yeah.
What are your influences in terms of vocalists that accompany themselves? Who do you look to?
Oh, boy. You know, Shirley is definitely one of them. There was this time, Peter Eldridge, who's, you know Peter really well, but he's, for our listeners, our artists in residence here at Western in the vocal jazz department. But Peter and I went to see Shirley in Boston, and she was singing and playing, and she got to, you know, Here's to Life, which is sort of like Shirley's gospel, you know? And so there was somebody in the club that had no idea. You just could tell. Like, they just kept eating their meal and clinking away. And she's, you know, she gets to the end of this beautiful, so here's to life. And all of a sudden, this guy drops his knife or fork on the ground. And it just goes clink, 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 clink. And Shirley just stops, lets the chord ring out, and just turns slowly and looks right at him. And then just turns right back and keeps going. And the rest of us in the club are like, oh my God, Shirley just gave him like the look of death, you know? But she's definitely amazing. I saw her at Yoshi's right at the end of her life, and she could no longer play for herself, and she was just sitting in her wheelchair with a blanket and singing, and that was different for sure. Mm-hmm. She played with such restraint, I think, and harmonic and rhythmic discernment. I don't even think I come close to that in terms of, you know, supporting her phrasing ideas and all of that. I really love, you know, Peter Eldridge when he sings and plays. He's that level of comfort that he, you know, again, that he demonstrates every time he does it. It just, I'm really inspired to that as well. I don't get to sing and play often enough in order to, you know, to get there and be so comfortable, but it's fun.
Well, we've been friends. I mean, the listeners should just know the truth. We've been friends for a long time.
I know when you said you wanted to hear my life story, I'm like, you know half of it already.
I was there. I mean, I think it's been about 25 years.
Yeah.
Since we've been friends. We were in school here at Western Michigan University together. Yeah. We're both doing our undergraduate studies. And then you went on to Miami in Florida to pursue graduate studies. And I know that since then you've led a pretty exciting life. I was just wondering maybe if you could give us a brief account of where you've been and who you've worked with. And
oh, gosh.
I mean, I know it's a long list, but...
It is a long list. It's not necessarily that interesting. But yeah, well, you know, when I left here and went to Miami, I also, my summers were spent in Florida at Disney World. And at the time, they were running a college band program. I think they still are, but they don't have the big band and the vocal group. But six of us from Western went down and were like the first vocal group for the Ellington show. And I did that for two summers, and I got to work with some still people who are at the top of my list of folks I've worked with because they brought in just these amazing jazz vocalists. So we had Diane Reeves and Rosemary Clooney and Diane Schur and Joe Williams and then some other folks that weren't probably that exciting, but just to work alongside them, to rehearse them. The second year I became what Disney calls a lead, but I was basically the music director for the vocalists. And so I wrote the charts. So people, you know, John Otto, who was Rosemary Clooney's music director at the time, sent me the charts and said, we want background vocals here and here and here. And so I wrote them, and then we rehearsed and put it all together. So that was great. And the program came with master classes during the day. So, you know, we had Q&As with Diane Reeves. That was one of the most amazing moments of that summer. Just having her share about music and what inspires her and where her artistry comes from. We arranged, this is Kate Reed, actually, Kate Prather, but now Kate Reed, who graduated from here as well. She insisted that we get to sit down and have breakfast with Joe Williams. So Joe and Johnny Pate, his music director, took us out for breakfast, just the vocalists. And we just sat there and told stories. Well, actually, we didn't really tell stories. Joe told stories, and we listened. And that was... being in the presence of probably, you just felt like you were with one of the classiest people ever. And Mercer Ellington, Duke's son, came, and at that moment, he was trying to write strings into Duke's Black, Brown, and Beige suite. And so he brought the manuscript with him and said, I'm looking for people who will transfer this onto expanded paper so I can write in the string parts. Of course, everybody still then was writing in pencil and paper. So we literally went to his hotel room, and he pulled the bedspread off the bed and ordered room service, and we all sat on the floor and had a picnic. And at the end of that, telling us all these stories about Duke's band and being on the road with them, he handed us Duke's original manuscript and said, you know, take this home and transfer it onto this here, and then I can write the strings. And of course, you know, you're walking out of the hotel with, like, the Holy Grail, basically. It's amazing to, you know, so all night, we just all stayed up, about four of us, sat around a table all night long and just copied music. And so just getting to intersect with people like that, it's been great. I moved from there to Chicago. I was in Chicago for 9 years and freelancing there, and then moved on to Los Angeles. And I kind of did the same thing in both places. You know, the studio work and the freelance arranging and writing and singing in professional groups. And then, you know, in Chicago, there was a little bit more of the publishing demo kind of studio work. you know, the studio work in each town is just based on whatever industry is there. So it wasn't a lot of television. Was starting to really slow down in Chicago. And then when I moved to Los Angeles, I did more of singing on movie scores, you know, movie soundtracks, and which sounds really exciting, but I mentioned to you before the interview started, you know, it was a lot of whole notes. Like, so at one point I'm sitting there going, I'm just holding out whole notes for these next 4 hours, you know? But it's a lot, it's still fun to be a part of making a movie and making a movie soundtrack. And gosh, people I've gotten to work with. Everybody's thrilled about the fact that I got to sing with Adele on the Oscars, but yeah, you know, that was just,
I saw that. I mean,
did you really?
Yeah. What was that like just being on the Oscars?
You know, I'm one of those people that loves to just take in the whole production of it. And I want to know how things work, you know? So it's more fun for me to watch the stage hands, the changing of the set, the rehearsing of the time, you know, because that's a live show. So these miraculous things that happen in 3 minutes or 2.5 minutes when there's a commercial break. You know, and then in terms of the music, if the music is not that hard, I mean, it's like, ooh, let the sky fall, ooh, when it crumbles, ooh, we will stand tall, ooh. I mean, it's just, you know, pretty basic. And we rehearsed it about a million times. But and a lot of that was because of Adele, and she had just had her surgery, and she didn't, her vocal surgery, and she didn't, she was leaving nothing to chance. Like, I can imagine other people who are as popular as her would maybe not come in until the day of. And we were with her from Thursday all the way on to Sunday night. And she was just leaving nothing to chance, you could tell. So that was pretty impressive.
So she was insisting on the rehearsals. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the producers or anything. She wanted to make sure it was going to be perfect.
Yeah, and we had done a pre-record. You know, in shows like that, you do pre-record so that they can still broadcast things if anything goes wrong. And also, you know, with such quick turnaround, when you're watching the show live, you're not hearing us sing live. We are singing live in the moment, but quality control, it's all pre-recorded, you know.
Right.
So she could have asked for the track of us and just been in her hotel room singing it. But yeah, there was a special rehearsal called at the soundstage in the Valley. I go down there and the whole orchestra is there and all the whole choir and her rhythm section and her three backup singers. And all of a sudden you realize, oh, Adele's coming, you know? And, but she was, you know, super easy to work with and, super friendly. And, you know, I found really the most people are in the business. You really can't get far by being nasty and dark. So
there's a couple of vocal jazz groups that you've been a part of over the years.
Yeah.
Sixth Wave.
Yeah.
And the Vertical Voices. Mm-hmm. How did those come about? Tell us a little bit about those groups.
Sixth Wave is an a cappella group based in Los Angeles, six singers, and another dear friend of ours from Western here. We were all in school together, Jennifer Shelton at the time, now Jennifer Barnes. She was in Sixth Wave before me. And when I called her and said, I think I might be moving out to LA. And she said, well, do you want to be the baritone in Sixth Wave? And I was like, well, sure. So I actually had to go out there and audition for that group. It had been a group in existence for maybe 8 years before I joined. And they sang every style. We sang, you know, Stevie Wonder and James Taylor and Imogen Heap and to like jazz standards and anything in between. It was kind of like whatever we liked, you know. We weren't getting rich doing the group, so it was like, let's just make music we want to make.
It was a cappella?
Yeah, it was a cappella. We would play percussion ourselves sometimes, or towards the end, we started traveling with a percussionist too. And the group didn't really reach a formal end. We just, you know, I moved here. Jennifer moved to Texas. There was the giant diaspora of Sixth Wave from Los Angeles. So, but the great thing about that group, that's really how I got into the studio work in Los Angeles, because the scene in Los Angeles is all contractor driven. And so you have to catch the attention of a contractor in order for them to put you on a television show or a session of any kind, basically. And so they would come to the Sixth Wave concerts and, you know, sort of like, well, who's the new guy? And then my first job was singing on National Treasure 2. And our lead soprano, Elin, at the time, she had gotten a call and said, and the contractor said, can I put Greg on this? And she said, oh yeah, he'd be great. So that's how I got my first film call. So that was great. That was a great experience to be in that group. We had a lot of fun traveling. We've been, you know, all over Canada and the States. We recorded a CD called Happy Madness. And then in the course of finding our new lead soprano for Sixth Wave, Julia Dollison, when Julia came to her audition, she gave Jennifer and I a copy of this project that she and her husband Carrie had done called Vertical Voices. And what they had done was taken five of Maria Schneider's pieces and re-recorded them with them singing vocally, of course, with them singing all of the instrumental parts. And then, not the rhythm section, they tracked with Maria's rhythm section, but they sang all the horn parts, and then they improvised themselves, all the horn solos. And Jennifer and I got this, and it's like our ears exploded, you know? It was, we were all like, yeah, she'll be great in Sixth Wave. Now, back to this Maria Schneider project, look at, you know, track two, minute, you know, 1 minute and 30 seconds, and you're just, you know, just listening like crazy. And finally, we just kind of bothered them until they said, okay, we'll sing it with you. You know, we'll let you sing it with us, basically. So we started putting it together. And then we just had our first rehearsal in Sacramento in Carrie and Julia's apartment, and kind of freaked out a little bit about the fact that we interpret and hear and appreciate music in the same way. And we got to the end of a rehearsal, or end of a song even, and realized that we hadn't talked about phrasing. We hadn't mentioned dynamics. We just did it naturally. It's like we all have the same kind of ear going on. And Julia's lead is definitely a lead to be reckoned with. We've known Julia for a long time and have wanted to sing with her for a long time. But she leads in such a way that you just fall in line and you love doing it, you know? It's that awesome, I'm just going to do what she's doing, and it's going to be great, you know? So we started doing a bunch of other music. We brought our own charts, our own compositions in, and our new CD has none of Maria's music on it. It's a brand new CD called Forward, and that's all, again, our own compositions and arrangements that were kind of written for the group. And there's one of my pieces that I kind of had to scale it back a little bit. I wrote it right when I graduated from University of Miami, and then I expanded it into a giant vocal arrangement, and Larry's group at Miami recorded it, probably six parts, you know, in some spots. And so I dialed it down to four, and we did that. But it also is a piece that I've done solo on, in concert, and also on my first CD called Tournesol. So I'll play that if you want. La 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 la
I really love that song, Greg.
Thank you.
It's great. I remember hearing it for the first time on your record, Tournesol, years ago.
Many years ago, yeah.
And then you recorded it again with the Vertical Voices. And it was great to hear you guys live, too, when you came to school.
Yeah, here. You got to play.
I got to play.
Well, we had the pleasure of playing with you, I should say.
That was really awesome. Something special. Now, where can we find these albums?
They're on iTunes. The Vertical Voices stuff is obviously at our website, verticalvoices.com. If you just Google search, you know, right. My name, Greg Jaspers, or Vertical Voices, all of those. They'll come up with all those
online.
Digital services where we make tons of money.
And I forgot how wide your vocal range is, because I've heard you sing bass in vocal jazz group before, and then you're just soaring.
Yeah, we kid about like what part I sing in when we do sound checks in Vertical Voices. I'm like, okay, the bass, and then it's like, yeah, da, da. I mean, you know, we just write crazy parts for ourselves. But my range was not always that. I mean, I haven't added any more to the low end, but definitely
the high end.
Spent more time accessing the high end and figuring out, you know, the mix and the head voice and all those things. Yeah.
Because I remember hearing low notes from you
in
college and thinking, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It was fun. I do love singing bass. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Could you tell us a little bit about what influences you or who influences you compositionally?
It's a pretty broad spectrum of music. And the way that I think that my inspiration and influence comes to me is, you know, something will catch my ear. I'll find out about an artist or a CD or a song or whatever. And then I just listen nonstop. Like I can't, you know, until I'm completely saturated with that piece or that music. Like right now I'm listening to the new Dirty Loops, you know, CD, which I imported, you know, it's not available online yet. But I had, you know, I heard it and then I just had to have it. And then I got sad. It was so funny. I was like, now I'm sad because now what are my ears going to like after this? Because it's just unreal. But it's kind of like that. So that's in my car right now and I'm still not tired of it. And I think it just goes in, you know. I don't think that I listen in that way with any sense of discipline about it. So I guess we can talk about things I've just absorbed in that way. All of the Yellow Jackets recordings, one of my favorite jazz fusion bands, which I think you turned me on to. You were really checking out Will Kennedy.
Yeah.
When we were doing the gig together in Traverse City, Greenhouse, I think, was the one, right? That's what you were listening to. Pat Metheny, of course. There's a Brazilian guitarist named Nando Loria, who I actually had the pleasure of meeting, and we've become really great friends. But his music is great. He went to Berkeley with Pat Metheny and tours with Pat, another multi-instrumentalist, but primarily guitar and vocal, lives back in Recife, Brazil. Now, you know, choral people like Morton Lauridsen, a Los Angeles-based choral composer and arranger, just stunning music. Eric Whitaker is a real famous choral name. I like a lot of his stuff. From when I was here at Western studying piano with Dr. Roederer, I love Brahms. I love Bach. And that's also something else I've realized about myself recently. It's strange, I think, to admit having this realization at my age. But I just am like, gosh, I am a harmony person. Like if I am not grabbed harmonically, I'm not gonna really be interested in the rest. But if the harmony is really interesting to me, then I'm gonna go and listen to the lyrics and, you know, and everything else about it. But I have to be sort of harmonically interested, I guess.
Well, you're right. It's certainly very eclectic in a wide range. So you mentioned Sixth Wave and Vertical Voices, but you've also recently formed a new vocal group based in Los Angeles,
yeah.
which maybe you can tell us how you're working that out now yeah. that you live in Kalamazoo.
I'm starting to wonder the same thing myself.
But this group yeah. is called Voasis, right?
Yeah, it's called Voasis. For those people at home who want to call it Oasis or Voices, it's like a vocal oasis. We had somebody call it the other day, wanted to talk about it with me, and they kept calling it Oasis. Oh, it was Michelle Weir. And I was like, it's Voasis, Mishi. The V is not silent. So there's a professional choral organization in Santa Fe called the Santa Fe Desert Chorale. And their artistic director, Joshua Haberman, he decided that he thought the organization should have a more contemporary a cappella ensemble under their umbrella. And so he called one of his best friends from like childhood, Deke Sharon, who's a big, big, big a cappella guy, writes all the big group arrangements for the sing-off, that television show, and did all the arrangements for the Pitch Perfect movies. And just, you know, is sort of like the father of a cappella in the States right now, maybe in the world. And Deke called me to say, we want to put a group together of all Los Angeles singers, and I want you to be the music director. And I said, well, Deke, you know, if you haven't been paying attention to Facebook, you might not know that I'm moving to Kalamazoo. And I'm not sure that that's going to work out. And he said, you know what? I want you. And so we'll make it work. So it's me and then seven other Los Angeles-based singers, but we've only performed in Santa Fe. So we rehearse in LA and we all get on a plane and go to Santa Fe and we do a series of concerts in a week. So it's like this professional group that an organization in Santa Fe started, but we're all basically from Los Angeles, except for me being here. So I fly out there once a month during rehearsal season and basically do retreat style rehearsals, you know, like 8 hours a day. And then the onus is on everybody to do a lot of homework too, because we can't just make progress in rehearsal. We've got to really make progress outside of rehearsal. But again, you know, I got to handpick the singers, so I just picked people that I knew would also do that. You know, it's a lot of fun when I'm on the gig. Like I really enjoy it, but it is a lot. It's a little bit exhausting too. You know, to always be thinking about that as well. So
that must have been fun to be able to handpick the singers and really have control over.
Yeah, you know, when people find out you're handpicking singers, you just make a lot of enemies left and right for the people that you didn't pick. But no, it is. It was fun. I mean, I didn't have the luxury of having auditions and then trying different voices together. But thankfully, because of all the studio work that I've done out there, and then being in Sixth Wave, and I had a really good sense of the voices I was considering. It just worked.
Well, how about some more music?
Yeah.
What else would you like to play for us?
You know, so I mentioned earlier when we were talking about It Could Happen to You, some other standards that I've thrown a twist into. There's this Gershwin tune, But Not For Me, and I was checking that out one day, and the lyrics, I was looking at the lyrics, you know, and they're pretty sad. And you're used to hearing it like, they're writing songs. It's this sort of bouncy swing
yeah,
tune, you know?
Right.
But then you look at the lyrics and you're going, this is really sad. So I don't know. I basically decided I would write a more somber setting for those lyrics. So, I did this at my first performance of this was at the New York Voices Vocal Jazz Camp that I've been teaching at since it started. And every year it's like, sing, but not for me. So somebody likes it. But yeah, I'll play that one.
They're writing songs of love, not for me. A lucky star's above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I found more clouds of gray than any Russian play could guarantee. I was a fool to forget that way. hi-ho, alas. And oh, so lackaday. Although I can't dismiss the memory of your kiss, I guess you're not for me. I was a fool to fall and get that way. Hi-ho, lass. No, so lackaday. Although I can't dismiss the memory of your kiss, I guess you're not.
That's a great arrangement. You talk about being harmonically moved by music, and I think that was a great example of something that moved me harmonically.
Really?
There was a couple spots in there right towards the end of the song where it's on the word not. I guess she's not,
mm-hmm.
form, whatever that mm-hmm. that movement is mm-hmm. right there. What is that? What are those chords?
I guess she's not.
What is that?
It's like a B flat diminished, but over the third, you know. And then my favorite chord in the world. Anybody who's listened to any of my music is like, oh, there's Greg's chord. But it's like a major chord, major triad, add nine, and then the third and the bass. Huh. You know.
Da da da.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's totally this, I mean, it's super sad, you know?
You're right.
But, like, My Funny Valentine is the opposite. It's like a super light lyric, you know, and super dark harmony, you
right.
know? So,
always,
maybe that'll be my next.
It's always a ballad, and it's always slow, and but it's not really a sad song.
Right, yeah. I'm gonna turn it into a major song. That'll be my thing. I'm going to find all those standards that the lyrics don't match the harmony, and I'm gonna make it right.
Okay.
Keith. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as I mentioned, we go back so many years, and as long as I can remember, you've always been committed to sharing new ideas and music with your friends and colleagues and your students now.
Yeah.
And now that you've moved back to Kalamazoo, you're the director of the vocal jazz department here at Western Michigan University, and now that you have 1 year under your belt here in the program, just curious, maybe what a couple of the concepts that you've been stressing with your students, just based on your real world experience.
Mm-hmm. It's great to be back, and I'm really happy to have that first year under my belt. Like, that is a relief to have that behind me. I don't think you ruined anything. I think. Tried to not burn the barn down, as they say. One thing, you know, when I was in school here, I would say that the ensemble dominated the vocal jazz scene. You know, I think I was the second jazz studies major with a voice emphasis, Kate Prather, now Kate Reed, being the first. So there wasn't really a track record for that. And as most things, even you know, this past year with students with emerging interests and then, you know, the faculty, thankfully, in the school tries to respond as much as we can in order to meet those needs and those interests. So that's what was happening in the jazz department at the time, but it really was Trent Kinnison and Steve Zagree and Tom Kniffick for the most part. And so it's been interesting to, you know, observe from the outside the development of jazz singing, especially on the solo side of things. And there's been some amazing people that, I mean, of course, Steve's been here the whole time, but Sonny Wilkinson was here for several years, and then Diana Spradling, and all doing amazing work. And then Dwayne Davis, who's been a part of the family here at Western, even from when we were in school together. And that's, he's one of those people you just never want to let go, ever. You know, in terms of my experience in the real world, it's two-pronged for me. It's trying to determine whether my students have an artistic inclination. You know, do they want to explore and develop themselves artistically only? Or do they want to be, you know, an incredibly skilled, versatile, workable musician and do as much as they possibly can? And I think for me, personally, I was more of the latter, you know, when I got out. I mean, I don't come from a musical family professionally, so I didn't have a role model of like, here's what it looks like, and I just took every gig. My goal was to make a living making music, and that meant, you know, some awesome gigs and some things that I was like, well, I hope nobody ever finds out that I did that, you know. But when it comes to jazz, and especially, you know, being in the real world for 18 years and working with and meeting lots of folks who are on the jazz scene, and really noticing what it is that makes them special, it's kind of simple, but it really boils down to their being themselves. And for students, I think that really means having to know yourself, you know? So there's as a teacher and as an educator, I think part of my job is to help them, you know, encourage them and help them sort of keep exploring that. That's a never-ending journey, of course, but to keep exploring who they are as people, what it is they want to say, and then how to do so musically. And then, you know, and then pulling in influences that either I think they should listen to, they should maybe try to have a little bit more of this influence musically in their skill set, or people that I know are just going to light them on fire and they're going to want to, you know, it's going to propel months of practicing because they're so enthused about something. You know, I really want to see my students becoming themselves personally and musically.
That's great. Well, let's hear some more music. I know you have an arrangement of Secret Love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's my pop. That's my pop arrangement.
And you talked about versatility. So yeah. Let's hear this.
Okay.
Once I had a secret love, lived within the heart of me. All too soon my secret love became impatient to be free. So I told a friendly star the way the dreamers often do, just how wonderful you are, why I'm so in love with you. Now I shouted from the highest hills, even told the golden daffodils. Now my heart's an open door, my secret love's no secret anymore. Day. Even toward the golden daffodils. Now my heart's an open door. My secret love's no secret anymore.
It's weird to end that way. Usually, when I do it in concert, I get like the, I get the whole audience, but da 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 da, yeah, and there's a whole sing along.
Really,
and I'm riffing, yeah, and it's yeah. Everybody likes that one because it's totally, you know, diatonic land. It's like
we could have done that.
I mean, we could have. You want to sing? We get everybody singing along.
That we'll do that the next show.
Yeah, for you listeners at home, here's your cue. yeah, I, you know, if I play that with somebody else. With somebody else with the piano, they're always reading these chords and they're like, you know, you know, I'm like, no, there are no sevens in this whole song. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah, I know it's crazy, but there are no sevens basically. Yeah. So
well, let's get back to talking about your recordings.
Okay.
You also have a recording out that includes some hymns.
Yeah. It's all hymn tunes. Yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, it's called Crossings. You know, the thing I talked about in terms of my students, I guess, becoming themselves. This was a project that I did because I really felt called to do it, I guess. And just looking at all of the things that I care about and what makes me who I am musically and spiritually, especially. I grew up in the church here in Western Michigan. And these hymn tunes, they're like standards, you know? And when my extended family gets together, like at Christmas time, and we sing carols a cappella, like all four parts are there, you know? It's like wow. People know the tenor part, you know, in my family. We've got some altos. So you know, it's they're like standards to me and just comfort and old friends. Maybe it's my own sense of needing to find peaceful places and times for meditation and contemplation. And now I sound really Los Angeles when I'm talking about that. But, you know, I thought about this project in terms of it being my contribution to helping people find some quiet in their day. And what was a challenge for me was that I had to really work hard to silence the voices of, I hope my musician friends will be impressed with this, you know, because it's not the mission of this project at all. So instead of, I didn't have any charts. I actually brought to the studio with me a giant piece of paper that had just all kinds of names on it of people that I would just look up and see their name and hope that, you know, there's something in the music that would reach, that person would appreciate. So deliberately, it was like, my friend Julie Nemitz's daughter Lucy, you know, like a 3-year-old at the time, wow. and then my friend Tim's mom, who's, you know, going through dementia and is in her 70s, and you know, and just and I think like those seeing names like that, just all across the spectrum, really kind of kept me focused on that being the purpose of this project and not like, hey, listen to this amazing harmonic language, you know,
yeah,
which is a trap we can fall into pretty easily. So, do you want to hear something from it?
I really would. I mean, that's so interesting. I mean, what a different way to do a recording. And
yeah.
And like you say, it must have been challenging, like you said, but it must have been liberating too, just to just be yourself and play whatever and not have to be hip or impressive, but just play from your soul and your heart, and just, like you say, thinking about people that aren't musicians and how this would reach them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so often we do the opposite. Mm-hmm. We're trying to impress people. And so I hope a lot of people have appreciated this.
Yeah. You know, I keep hearing, oddly enough, I'm hearing a lot that it's being used for like life transitions when someone's terminally ill or has passed on already. And either, you know, I hear a lot of times we played this at the bedside for the last 2 weeks of this person's life, and it just, you know, and it made things so much better. And every time I get a message like that, I'm just like, that's amazing. You know, that's exactly what I had in mind. That's exactly what I was hoping. And
what an honor, right?
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
To have this be a part of that, like, yeah, it brings tears to my eyes. But, and the other thing too, like, I was really specific, you know, just because my faith tradition that I was raised in is Christian, and these are Christian songs. Like, deliberately, there are no lyrics on this project because I wanted my Jewish friends or my non-Christian friends, or my, you know, Muslim friends, anybody who has a spiritual side, I wanted this to be something they could listen to and not be caught up in like, but that's not the language I use. You know, it hopefully goes beyond that. So yeah, I think that this might be the first piece on the project, Shall We Gather at the River?
Thank you.
Well, that's really beautiful.
Thank you.
It's been really great to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
We're all glad that you're back here in Kalamazoo, and we're really looking forward to seeing how you continue to impact our students and our city. And thanks so much for being here today.
My pleasure, Keith. Thanks for having me.
Keith Hall, host of WMUK's Jazz Current, spoke with Greg Jaspers, who teaches vocal jazz at Western Michigan University. Greg Jaspers' music is available on iTunes and Amazon. On Thursday, November 6th, he'll appear with Gold Company in its sneak preview concert at the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Gold Company will also perform its yearly Miller Auditorium Showcase on Valentine's Day, Friday, February 14th, 2015. I'm Kara Lawrence. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening to WMUK's Let's Hear It.